Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few black-owned radio networks that explores solutions for the black community. Presents Black Urban America. Everyone that listens by laptop, you could dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. The lineup, we got some changes. Okay, listen carefully. Starting March, every first Tuesday, we have somebody that's going to be discussing colonialism among black women. On every second Tuesday, starting March, we're going to have Radio Talk Chicago with Emma Young. And tonight, and this is the third Wednesday of the month, we have Milwaukee with Bev Williams. On Saturday, we have Provocative Thought with Carter Steen. Tonight, well, let me give you a little background. Y'all remember Judge Bruce Schroeder from Kenosha, Wisconsin? The one that was the presiding judge over Rittenhouse, the white kid, 18 years old, that killed. Remember the word, killed two people. Now, this judge is the longest-serving state court justice, 1983. What's so weird is his rulings over the evidence and the language in favor of Rittenhouse. He dismissed charges, and Rittenhouse was acquittal for shooting two people. White guy. But there was a young black man named Cortez Bailey. All he had was a gun. Or he was charged with first degree recklessly endangerment. His language toward this young brother, I'm going to quote Judge Schroeder, what he said. One of the ways is to deal with people very seriously who bring their guns is to sentence a long time. Now, there's a hypocrisy here. It's a hypocrisy. He let a white guy that killed two people, no matter if they were black or white, he killed two human beings. Another guy just had a firearm. Well, tonight, we have the mother of Ms. Cortez Bailey, and Ms. Williams is going to have a discussion with her about what happened during the case. So listen up, folks. Ms. Williams, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing, Mr. Jones?
All right. Ms. Gail, are you there?
I am.
Huh?
I am. Hello, how are you?
How you doing? Hi, welcome to Black Urban America, Ms. Gail. And I appreciate you for coming on the show to talk about your son. To talk about it. I know it's going to be hard for you, but we're here for you. Now, Ms. Bev, I'm going to cue out, and I'm going to let you take it over, okay?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jones.
You're welcome.
Well, good
go
evening.
Right ahead.
Okay, good evening to everyone. Today, we're going to talk with the mother of Cortez Bailey, a 22-year-old black man sentenced by Judge Bruce Schroeder. And Mr. Jones says Schroeder, he is from New York, but Bruce Schroeder is the judge for the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. He was the judge who presided over the trial. First, I want to give everyone some information. Wisconsin is 6% black and comprises 42% of Wisconsin's prison population. We have the highest incarceration rate of black people in the nation, in the nation. Now we have Republicans in Wisconsin pushing for a change in constitutional bail laws because of the horrific actions of one unstable black man, okay, and the careless actions of low bail in the Milwaukee City Attorney's Office with his release. I say let the constitutional bail laws stand and monitor its adherence with violent offenders. We know that the criminal justice system is biased towards people of color across the nation regarding fairness, equality, and sentencing for crimes by minimizing criminal acts of white citizens, minimizing criminal acts of white citizens, and overcharging black citizens for simple misdemeanors, trumped-up charges, or breaking any kind of laws. And, of course, the majority of us do not condone breaking laws, but we do believe, and I believe, in constitutional and state sentencing laws, fairness in the criminal justice system, and upholding agreements made in the court. Now, I spoke with Ms. Cortez, and the story she has told me about Judge Bruce Schrader's actions in the courtroom during her son's hearing was very dismayed, and I was extremely disappointed that a court official would speak to her the way he did, especially, and to do the things that was done in that courtroom. So, Ms. Cortez, can you please tell the audience what happened during your son's hearing?
Yes. Let's clarify. I'm Ms. Gail Cortez is my son.
Ms. Gail, right. I'm sorry, Ms. Gail.
Cortez is my son. He was promised in this trial that he would get 3 years time served, with an exception with maybe being on leg monitor or maybe like the 7 to 7, so he can be able to get a job and continue to prosper in life. Cortez has no previous discharge of weapons. He's never hurt anyone. He's never killed anyone. He's never fired a firearm until this night. He did plead guilty to unlawful discharge of a weapon, and then they changed it until the charge?
Reckless
endangerment. And so they told him, his lawyer Chris told him that if he took the plea for reckless endangerment, that he would get 2 years, at the most 3 years time served. And then he said, well, the judge probably will still put you on a leg monitor or put you on a 7 to 7. We get to court for sentencing. And from my understanding, sentencing, you are not supposed to talk about the previous cases or any of that. You're supposed to talk to the defendant about how he feels, ask him, do he have anything to say, which he did. And then you say what you need to say as far as the prosecutor, as far as the defendant's attorney, and as far as the judge. Well, the judge went back, got a file, threw my son's file. He starts reading off misdemeanor charges of previous charges up in North Chicago. And so, make a long story short, going through those files, he ended up, you know, his whole demeanor just starts to get really mean. He starts reading off, oh, you got a misdemeanor. No, he says, oh, you got a theft, you know, for this. And kind of find out it was as simple as I think it was a pack of diapers or something when he was 19 or something like that. And then
Boy
he
baby.
Went to saying,
mm-hmm.
yes, talking about Bailey. And so then he starts talking in this, like, more angry voice. Mind you, when we first walk into the courtroom, he's looking at me, my family. It was so many of us in there to support him. He had his mentors in there that are white. He has black, white, Puerto Rican mentors that was in the courtroom that wrote letters and everything for Cortez. And so he's seen so many people overwhelmed with that, and then he just started looking at us as if we were like we had a disease. Like he just couldn't wait for us to get out of the courtroom. And so he started reading through court. He's supposed to be handing down his sentence, and so he says, "Oh, so I see you a thief. You just one of them Chicago thugs, a thief." He goes from calling Cortez into calling them names. And so
he called him a thief.
He says, you a thief. You one of them Chicago thief thugs. He said, oh, you Chicago thugs think y'all can come here and just do what y'all want, shoot up our town and this, that, and the other, and the third. Mind you, Cortez is not from Chicago. Not to say that Chicago is bad or good, but I know a lot of people do hear a lot of bad things about Chicago. But Cortez, just to clarify things, he is not from Chicago. Cortez is from a town that just so happens to be called North Chicago, a small suburban town that's out by the rich town of Lake Forest. It's out by the rich, wealthy town of Gurnee, Waukegan, Zion, Beach Park, and it just so happened to be called North Chicago, but it's just a small town. It has nothing, 110% nothing to do with Chicago. And so he's like, oh, and I see that you had an altercation with your girlfriend. It's not his girlfriend. It was his wife. And so he said, oh, so you tried to probably one of those Chicago thugs that just come here and just beat up on your girl in front of the kids. And I'm looking like, wait, is this sentencing or we're going through trial? And are you the judge or are you the prosecutor? And so he goes on to say, and this is a good city of Wisconsin expects for me to hold up, you know, the laws and the rights of this and the third. So then make a long story short, I can go on and it is so much more and it is so much deeper, but I know you guys only have maybe an hour or so of show. But he goes on to say, well, they expect for me to, you know, hold up, you know, this good town of Wisconsin and you Chicago people is not going to keep coming here thinking you can just shoot up our town and leave and go back to your town and this and the other and third. And I'm getting so angry because I'm thinking like, wait a minute, you're saying things that are not true. First of all, it wasn't a beating of his girlfriend. It was an altercation that they missed, a misunderstanding of her wanting him not to go out somewhere, and she lied, and she went back to the police station and told him that she lied. That was in record that he didn't read off, but he read off all the bad part.
Ms. Gail, he only read two misdemeanors.
Two misdemeanors. Okay. Nothing that has to do with discharge of a weapon. Nothing that has to do with hurting anyone. He's never killed anyone. He's never hurt anyone. He's never hit his wife. And so he's reading all of this off Cortez. It's just, you know, let's listen to him. He didn't interrupt him. He wasn't disrespectful. He asked Cortez, you know, and do you have anything to say? Cortez said, Your Honor. He said, you know, I've done some things in my life that I'm not proud of. He said, this is something that I've done, that I did. It was a stupid decision. He didn't go into talking to anything about his disability. He didn't go into talking about anything about the fact that Cortez was talked into doing a drug and his mind just was not there. He made a horrible decision, and he did. He didn't go into the fact that Cortez and his mom have been together. Me and his dad was together 31 years, and we have eight kids together. He didn't go into the fact that his dad just left him at a drop of a dime, and a kid would not be in a right mind at that time. It's no excuse for it. And Cortez, and I'm his mother, and I'm saying Cortez deserves something. But to sit up here and send my son, give my son, at first he originally tried to give him 15 years, and then the madam secretary hurried up and typed something up really quick, and she let him know that this is what I end up finding out later. I didn't know everything what everything meant, but his own people came out of side room after court was over with and hugged me and cried with me and said, I'm so sorry. Your son was not treated fair in that courtroom. This is not right.
Let me say this to you, Ms. Gail. His own people.
Yes, ma'am.
You mean Judge Schrader?
And I have their names, but I'm not going to say their names because I don't want to jeopardize their job. But they came out of the courtroom off of that side room, two of them, and they said he was wrong. He was so wrong. The prosecutor whispered to me and said, I'm so sorry. He said, I wasn't even asking for that much time. He said, And so he tried to give my son 15 years originally. And then the madam secretary heard up and typed to him. And this is what I end up finding out from his own people, from inside people. And they told, and the madam secretary let him know that the charge that Cortez has only carries at the maximum that he can give him with 12 and a half years. So then he changed it to 10 years. Make a long story short, someone called him to the back. I had never seen this happen before. They called him to the back. He ended up going to the back. So by now we're all like, wait a minute, how does this happen? You know, where do they do this that I'd never experienced this, you know, in court or watching it on TV where they call the judge off of the, you know, bench and have him to come to the back. So then it's like the whole courtroom was like focusing on that back room, what that gentleman had called him back there for. I don't know if that was his person that gives him, you know, cues, you know, correct him. When so my understanding, that person that called him to the back was letting him know, like, wait a minute, you told us that you were getting ready to send Cortez Bailey home on a leg monitor. And with it's also where he can go to work and this and other. I didn't even know that. I thought he was just going to give him time serve and then, you know, make him take his drops every week or whatnot. But I was grateful for that. And so they told him like 10 years. No. So he changed it from 15 years. Because, and the only reason he changed it from 15 years because the Madam Secretary let him know that the most it carries is 12 and a half years. He changed it from 12 and a half years, the 15 years, to 10 years confinement. When they pulled him back and talked to him, he ends up changing that only because I believe the people was like, no, we've interviewed this child because, you know, they have this thing called the PSI or something that watches Cortez while he's in there. They observed him while he was in there. Cortez didn't even know it, you know, but they let you know at the end. And so even the person that interviewed him that basically works for the state, they recommended at the most, at the maximum, 2 years. 2 years. And then he still said 10 years confinement. No, he said 10 years confinement. So then when they pulled him back to the back, he changes it because they got on him and changed it to 5 years confinement. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Ms. Bell, why, you know, usually judges go off the recommendation during the screening of the defendant. Why he did not give him 2 years instead of 10 years? And you gotta remember, this man been on the bench since the '80s. God knows how many black defendants he sitting unfairly.
Let me also say this. It's other gentlemen that are involved in this case that has unlawful discharge of weapons, that has shot people, that has hurt people, that has drug records. I'm talking about horrible records. He gave them 9 years, 5 years on paper, 4 years confinement. He gave my son, the one that's married, the one that has no previous record of discharge, has never hurt anyone, has never killed anyone, has done everything that he was supposed to do, didn't get in any trouble while he were in there. All of the guards gave their report on him. They said he was an upstanding citizen. They do not think he's a lost cause to the world, to the city. I mean, like I say, the people who even work for the judge that does the PSI where they interview the inmate. Yes.
And that's rare.
And they,
that's very rare.
And they even, yes. And so it's like, he just was looking at him like, excuse my language and forgive me if I'm wrong and you can bleep it out. But he was looking at him like he was just another nigger. He was looking at my son like he was just disgusted.
I'm going to tell you something, Bella. You know, thug is a cold word for the N-word. It's a cold word.
Yes.
Well, let me tell you something.
It's a new way of calling somebody the N-word. I'm sorry, Ms. Bev. Go ahead, man.
Let me tell you something, Ms. Gail and Mr. Jones, I was going to give the racist history of Judge Bruce Rader, but a year prior to the Rittenhouse trial, he was caught on audio saying the N-word. He was caught on audio saying the N-word, and he claimed that he was just having a conversation with some people, and he was quoting someone else who said something that bad. Okay, something about take the whites but kill the N-words, okay?
Yes.
So this was caught on this. Now listen to this. This audio was filmed by the man who called the agitators to the Black Lives Matter protest for Jacob Blake. And he's the one called the agitators to come there with guns. He's the one that filmed Judge Bruce Schrader saying that. Take the whites and kill the N-words. And this man is still on the bench.
still and let me bench. Also say, let me also say this, Miss Beverly. He also, I watched the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. He badgered, he snapped on the prosecutor for bringing up Kyle's previous records, right?
But with my son, he
brought up all of my son's stuff for, it was like the total opposite. He snapped on the prosecutor for the prosecutor doing his job, bringing up Kyle Rittenhouse's previous arrest. But when my son was getting ready to get sentenced, he brought up all of my son's things, and then his lawyer couldn't say a word. And he badgered him and talked to him so mean, so crazy.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just shaking my head, crying with tears. He looked behind my son and looked at me and said, "Stop shaking your head before I put you out of my courtroom." I said, "Your Honor, can I please say something?" I said, "I'm his mother."
I was surprised he didn't threaten to lock you up.
I said, "I'm his
mother."
I'm surprised
he didn't threaten to lock you up.
He said, 10 years, 5 years confinement, 5 years probation. I said, "Wow." So when it was over with, I said, "Your Honor, can I speak now? Can I say something?" He said, "No. If you want to speak to me, write a letter." I said, "I'm sorry." And then even the prosecutor said, "Your Honor, that's the mother." He said, "I'm not talking to you. It's against the law for me to talk to you while he's not in the courtroom." I said, "Your Honor, can you please bring my son back in here?" I said, "I just want to let you know that the one that you just gave the most time to is the one that don't have no record. I said, the one that you just gave the most time to is the one that's never been in trouble. I said, the one you just gave the most time to is the one that's married, is the one that did everything that he was supposed to do. I said, he made a horrible decision. I said, 10 years. He said, "Ma'am, you can keep talking all you want to. You're going to be in trouble." He said, "I'm not going to change the decision. Get out of my courtroom." I said, "Wow. Wow." I said, "But Your Honor, 10 years. I said, please. I said, put him on house arrest. Put him on 7 to 7. I said, as a matter of fact, just give me his time. I said, just please let him come home. I said, because what is prison going to do? I said, that's not going to make him a better man. That's not going to make him a better person.
Right.
It is not. He could have sent them to boot camp. He could have made them get. He could have did something else to reconstruct his life. He could have asked me, "Ma'am, let me sit and talk to you for a minute."
So what kind of level did Cortez go to? Was it minimum or max?
He sent Cortez to Dodge. My baby has never been in trouble before, sir. He's never been in trouble before. Besides,
what level is that prison?
Sorry.
What level is that prison?
That prison has murderers there. It has rapists there.
So
it has anything you name
there. So he's in the maximum security or a minimum security?
I haven't talked to him since he's left. I don't know what's going on with him. And then at the end of him sentencing him, and it's like he sentenced him off of his anger. It's like he didn't sentence him off of just being a judge and trying to treat everybody accordingly, trying to treat people how they're supposed to be treated as a person, as a human being. He treated my son like he was just a mutt, like he was nothing. He kept looking at my son, him and the others, the madam that sits to his right. They both kept just looking at my son and looking at him like he had a disease. He had my son 20-something feet away from him as if my son had a disease. But with Kyle, he sat right next to Kyle, played opera music for him.
Yes, he did.
Ask Kyle what kind of music would he like to listen to.
Yes.
And then Kyle came around and looked at his computer with him. Yes, sir.
How many years he has to do? I know he was sitting at 5, but when does he see the parole board?
I have none. No.
So is he allowed visits?
It's a super max correctional prison.
Wow.
And
let me put this out there
one more time, Ms. Beverly. Cortez has never discharged a firearm. Cortez has never been in trouble in this sense. Cortez has a disability that was not even brought up in court. His lawyer didn't even bring it up in court.
Poor representation from your attorney. So then
Cortez was asking his lawyer in court when he was handing down the 10 years, 15 years, 5 years. He said, "Is this really happening?" His own lawyer told him, "Just shut up and be quiet." He said, "I'm sorry. Just shut up and be quiet."
Ms. Bailey? I don't mean, I mean, Ms. Gail, Mrs.
Yes.
Cortez, I don't mean to say what I'm about to say.
Yes.
I know many of my friends that I grew up with went to, you know, get this serious thing and went off to prison and everything. They don't come home the same.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You need to visit him if he's allowed visit. But I guess at a supermax, they're not allowed that much visits. And I mean, it's stuff that go on there in prison that
I know. I've heard about it. Just please don't put it in my mind anymore, because I haven't eaten since my son left. I haven't slept good since my son left. Like, if he was, he's been gone almost a year. He was right there. I said, can I just hug my son before you send him to prison? He said, no. I said, can I just hug him? I said, tell him that I love him. He said, no. He just yelled at me like I was nothing. He kept yelling at me like I had did something wrong. And I'm like, Judge, I said, he's a good kid. Cortez is that type of kid. He will mow your grass. He will shovel your snow. And then you try to pay him, he will tell you, keep your money. Cortez is that type of kid. If he see you sad, he going to come and tickle you. He going to come and kiss on you. He going to come and love on you until he make you smile, until you feel it better. He just made a stupid decision being with some kids.
Right. No, he didn't. Now, Ms. Gail, there were some things that went on with the attorney also. The attorney told your son about getting the 2-3 years.
He promised my son. He said 2 to 3 years at the most, but he said it's going to be considered time served. He said, but you will be on paper. He said, you're probably going to be having a drop it once a week or once every 2 weeks or something like that. He said, and they're probably going to make you finish again your GED. I said, that's all good stuff. That's all stuff that he needs. I'm telling you, I'm not that type of mother that put my kids up on a pedestal. I felt like Cortez needs something. You know, I'm a single mom struggling trying to make things work. In order to get his lawyer paid, I sold so many dinners. I did so much Instacarting trying to get his lawyer paid. And all along, it just didn't help. I needed a good lawyer, and this lawyer just wasn't. He didn't even speak up for Cortez. He didn't fight for Cortez. Everything that he said to the judge, he said it one time. He was like, well, I said what I needed to say. I said, no. I said, you his lawyer. You fight for somebody's life. You fight for my son's life. I said, everything that you said to the judge, you said it one time. I said, when you try to let somebody know something, you got to say it more than once. I said, the only person that we got to say something to one time is God. I said, because he hear you the first time.
Right.
I said, but that judge didn't hear half of the things you were saying.
Right. Now, Ms. Gail,
and he was just like, I'm sorry, I dropped the ball. I'm sorry, I dropped the ball.
And that's why he's going to be reported to Wisconsin Office of Lawyer Regulations. But let me say this to you, Ms. Gail.
Yes, ma'am.
He made a deal with the prosecution for the 2 to 3 years time served. And then when it was time for his son to go to court, he told
everybody
Cortez
was quiet.
He told Cortez not to tell about anything. Can you tell that part, please?
He did. He told him it was 2 or 3 years time served. That's what he told Cortez. He pulled him in a room. And so he called me and told me what he was going in front of the judge for. I said, okay. I said, that's durable. That's good. I said, he have a chance to rebuild his life and everything. And so he told Cortez, he said, but if anybody asks you, did anybody promise you anything? Did anybody tell you anything? Make sure you say no. And he was like, oh, okay. You know, and being an attorney, we don't know, you know, everything. We don't know our rights, our laws, everything the way we should. And so if the judge asked him, did anybody promise you anything? Did anybody tell you anything? He was like, no. And so his lawyer's like shaking his head to Cortez, like, you know, to let him know, like, you saying the right thing. But all along, when the gentleman that came out and told me that the judge was wrong for sentencing my son to all those years, he's the one, he was like, that lawyer should never have told him that. He said, that is against the law. That is just, I said, well, I don't know. I said, all I know is that I'm paying this man, and he told me that these are the things we're supposed to say and what we're supposed to agree to. But then it was like at the end, the judge was like, you know, I'm recording this. I'm not valuing anything else. And so I just like, I just feel like I'm in a dream. I feel so helpless for my son. I feel like a lot of this is my fault because I don't know what to do. I just feel helpless. And I feel like if I had the money, like all the attorneys that I could have gotten, they wanted $30,000 and $40,000 and $60,000 and $70,000 to take his case. This lawyer only wanted $10,000. So from jump, I just started busting my ass trying to just sell dinners to, you know, to get this money to him. And family members as well helped pitch in to help pay for this lawyer. All along, he was like he didn't even care. And then I called him and asked him, what's going on? And his lawyer is drunk as hell talking to me.
Oh, wow.
I said, I thought you was trying to be working on an appeal. He was like, oh, I just had 6-7 beers, you know, I'm going to work on it tomorrow when I get up. It's like, I just feel like I'm in a dream, and I don't know, I just feel like maybe he worked with the prosecutor. It's just like, none of them cared about my son's life, my son's freedom, and they're not thinking about how they messed him up. It's going to set him back so far, sending him here. He could have just, I don't know, he could have sent him to a men's center or something to help rebuild him. He could have sent him to anger management and a whole bunch of, there's just so many other things I just felt like this judge could have done rather than sending this young kid to prison.
And Ms. Gail, I want to say this also, and you and I spoke on this. The fact that the attorney did not bring up your son's disability.
He did not.
He did not bring up your son's disability.
At all.
The fact that he told your son something, and then when your son went to the courtroom.
My son was asking him why he was at the table, Ms. Beverly. Yeah. He was asking, he said, I can hear my son saying, wait. He's like, Chris, I thought you said I get 2-3 years time, sir. He's like, just shut up. That's what he's telling my son. Just shut up.
It was poor representation. And these lawyers out here need to know that although we have African Americans out here getting in trouble, and just like this poor mother has sold dinners and did all that she could, borrowed from family and friends, tried to pay for representation, you had better represent African Americans in the appropriate manner, because if you don't, you will be reported to the Wisconsin Office of Lawyer Regulation. And that's what Ms. Gail is going to do. I've already talked to her about it. I've sent her the form. And you will be reported to the Wisconsin Office of Lawyer Regulation. So if you are to represent an African American in the state of Wisconsin, you will be filed on, okay? You will be filed on. Now, Judge Schrader has a history of racism. He should be removed from the bench. He has a history of racism with black defenders, yes.
My son was in there with this white, with this Caucasian guy. He says, man, I shot this gun. He's telling my son, man, I shot this gun off of such a... Make a long story short, before my son's sentences, my son say, Ma, this man just got sent home on 7-7. I said,
He did the same thing my son did. Well, as I stated before, you know, at the beginning of the show, Wisconsin has a history of racism in the criminal justice system, and we need
our legislators.
It's
like somebody has to take up for us. I feel so helpless. Who can help us?
Criminal justice system is a racist system.
Right.
I called the public defender's office, and the public defender's office is the coordinator there. She says, ma'am, I'm going to let you know I'm not a lawyer. She said, but I do work here, and I do have a authority here. She said, but I just read your son's case. She said, and ma'am, I'm sorry. She said, I apologize. She said, because your son was treated unfair. She said, I would advise you to go and file everything possible that you can for your son, as well as contact the NAACP. She said, I would get much attention to this. She said, of course. She said, every kid that do something like this, they need some kind of punishment. She said, but 10 years, 5 years, 4 years, no. She said, I read your child's file. She said, I read the PSI's file, the person that works for the state, and they talk so highly about Cortez. They've been watching him almost this whole year when he didn't even know it. And they told the judge personally, had to sit down and talk to the judge and told the judge, this kid is not a lost cause. This kid deserves a second chance at life,
judge
a second
Schrader
chance at rebuilding.
Judge Schrader does not care. Judge Schrader has a history of racism with black defendants. He tried to victim shame a black woman convicted of shoplifting by giving her 15 months in prison and telling her during her 2 years of supervision, every store she went into, including the grocery store, she needed to let them know I am a 2 year supervision and I shoplifted. Okay? This black woman had to go to the appeals court to have Judge Schrader's conviction overturned as far as victim shaming her. Okay.
I knew it was gonna be bad.
Right.
I knew it was gonna be bad.
Right. He should not be on the bench.
I knew it was
going to
be bad, Miss Beverly. When he started saying you Chicago thugs is going to stop thinking y'all could just come here and shoot up our town and leave and this and other and go back to your town, you this and you that, as if he wasn't even a person. You know, he started off all nice, Cortez this and Cortez that, but then all of a sudden he's just this horrible person and he's just reading off everything so angry. I'm like, why is he reading off my son's previous charges and getting ready to sentence him?
Because he has a history of racism with black defendants and he needs to be removed and reported.
And then I heard he talked to Kyle's family with no problem in court, Ms. Beverly.
Oh, yes,
no problem.
Yes,
but
yes,
then I couldn't say anything. I said, Judge, I'm his mom. I said, can I just please tell you how good of a kid he is? Can I just please? I said, can I just get 2 minutes of your time? He just kept yelling at me, no, no. If you want to talk to me, write a letter. I said, well, Judge, can you just call me once? Or can I just call you one time? Can I get one phone call from you? He said, no, I absolutely will not. If you want to talk to me, write a letter. He just kept talking to me like I was nothing and don't even know me.
But he did not treat the Caucasian family of Kyle Rittenhouse in that manner. He allowed Kyle Rittenhouse to stand behind him and watch a video.
Play opera music for him.
Right. He didn't allow them to bring Rittenhouse's prior record into evidence. He also did not allow the evidence showing, which would have been motive, showing Kyle Rittenhouse in a Wisconsin bar throwing the white supremacy sign and hanging out with the Proud Boys. He didn't
allow that into
evidence.
He wouldn't allow it.
Because
he allowed everything.
He dropped a couple of charges,
He
dropped a couple of charges, too.
But not only that, when the prosecutor was trying to fight the case, it was like the judge was acting more like Kyle's lawyer than his lawyer was. The judge kept going at the prosecutor like he was Kyle's lawyer.
And
you can clearly see this man crying. Oh, horrible.
He also told the people that got killed not to call them victims.
This man, Kyle was out for Christmas, Thanksgiving, and now has been chilling with Trump and some more stuff. And it just clearly speaks what it is. But if nobody on this earth will reach out and help me and help all these other black men that's getting slayed and destroyed in their minds and their hearts and their souls and their spirits, God is going to prevail if nobody else helps me. God is going to prevail if nobody else helps them. Because this needs to stop.
It can stop by removing one judge, and that's Judge Bruce Schrader. That's Judge Bruce Schrader, okay, by going through the process of having him removed from the bench for racism and improper behavior. It's time for some of our legislators.
Ms. Beverly, I wish you guys could have been there. Yes.
Yeah, I believe you. It's time for some of our legislators in Wisconsin, our black legislators in Wisconsin, to assist citizens with getting rid of some of these judges, these racist judges on the bench in Wisconsin. How in the world can Wisconsin, we have 6% black in the whole state of Wisconsin. Although Milwaukee per capita has more black people than Chicago, okay? But the whole state of Wisconsin is only 6% black. We have 6% black and 42% of Wisconsin, and we make up 42% of Wisconsin's prison population.
Because they're trying to put us in a jail like monkeys. They want to put us back in jail like we're monkeys, like we're nothing.
Well, I want to say this, Ms. Gail. We have the highest incarceration rate of black people in the United States of America. In the United States of America. Something needs to be done. We have Cortez Bailey from an Illinois suburb, okay, who was accused of having a gun.
Can you please repeat that one more time?
Okay, we have Cortez Bailey, a black young man, 22 years old.
They need to hear that again.
Okay, I want to say it, Ms. Gail. We have Cortez Bailey, okay, a black young man, 22 years old, from a suburb of Chicago, Illinois, okay, who was in a bad position, had a gun or whatever. Then we have Kyle Rittenhouse, a white teenager at the time, 17 years old, from a suburb of Illinois. See, here we go. A suburb of Illinois who comes into Wisconsin with a gun, okay? But Cortez Bailey is treated much differently than Kyle Rittenhouse. Cortez Bailey discharged his weapon because of self-defense. Kyle Rittenhouse discharged his weapon because of self-defense. But he shot three and killed two. And he's walking around free. Cortez Bailey is in a supermax prison, Wisconsin legislators. A supermax prison, okay, because of discharging a weapon with only two misdemeanors on his
make
record.
Make that make sense. Make it make
two
sense.
Two misdemeanors. And his mother sold dinners and borrowed from family and friends to pay $10,000 to a lawyer for poor representation. Now, if any lawyers are out here in this community or in the United States, because this is a national program, and you're willing to help Miss Bailey, please reach out. Please reach out. Because right now she doesn't have any more money to get an attorney. She's going to have to go to the public defender's office, and see if they can vacate her son's sentence until he have another trial or something can be done.
I just want any help I can get.
Right, because right now this is not what I call fairness in the criminal justice system. And I know, and we all know, it's happening across the nation. It's happening across the nation. We're going to focus on one case at a time. And this is a case, Cortez Bailey in Wisconsin. So if there are any attorneys out there who can help, please. And then I want to say this too, Ms. Gail and Mr. Jones. If there are any other black folks out here who have, or people of color, because it's not just black folks, people of color who have been into Judge Schrader's courtroom, then we need to get together. We all need to get together because we need to remove him from the bench. We need to remove him from the bench. He needs to go. If he's not going to retire on his own, then we need to remove him from the bench. In all legal ways possible.
And this is how it was posted on Facebook. It says, look at this picture. And it had my son and it had Kyle Rittenhouse. It says, look at this picture. Black kid discharged a firearm. Did not kill anyone, did not hit anyone, did not hurt anyone. White kid killed several people. Black kid sentenced 10 years, 5 years incarcerated, 5 years on paper. White kid goes home free.
And both claim self-defense. Both claim self-defense. And, you know,
make sense.
Right, Ms. Gail, it's racism and also economics. It's racism and economics. But we as black people have to empower ourselves. We have to empower ourselves. Like I stated, you know, taking that attorney to the Wisconsin Office of Lawyer Regulation, filing on him, filing on Judge Schrader for what he did in that courtroom, the behaviors exhibited in that courtroom, which shows some incompetence. considering that he didn't know it should have been 12 and a half years. He was trying to give your son 15. And then somebody had to call him to the back of the courtroom, all heads turning to the back, like, what's going on? And someone's informing him, you cannot do this. Okay, then having his own people in the courtroom come and talk to you and say, I'm so sorry, that should not have happened. Somebody needs to wake up. Governor Evers, wake up. Get this man off the bench. Get this man off the bench. Something needs to happen.
And it's like, this another thing, Ms. Beverly, how am I ever supposed to know my laws, my rights? You know, like, as a parent, why couldn't I say something? You decided to send my child to prison, take him away from me. Why couldn't I say something as a mother? You know?
Mr. Jones? But, you know, I don't know how it really works in the courtroom. I know that a lot of times these judges don't want you to say a thing, but I would have thought that possibly your attorney or your son's attorney could have said, judge, mother wants to say something or whatever. But as you
anything.
Say that, he was so afraid of the judge because the judge, I mean, he has a history of not treating defense attorneys. Well, no, he mistreats prosecutors, I should say. But he has a bad history with a lot of the attorneys. So it seems to me that, you know, he wasn't saying object or anything, huh?
This is the thing. I did a little research. So if they're white, if the defendant is white, he's with the attorney. But if the defendant is black, he's against the attorney. And then so if the defendant is black, he don't say anything to the prosecutor. He let the prosecutor say what they want to say. If the defendant is black, you know, it is what it is.
I just
feel helpless, and I just wish somebody can direct me to, you know,
right.
Because I don't have the funds that it takes, that I think it would. I really feel like if I had a really good attorney, maybe he would be home, you know, only God knows, but maybe he would be home, you know, with the 2-3 years that he was promised, or maybe something else could be done. But I just feel like this is so unfair. And then, like I say, it's other defendants involved in this. How it's like, I don't know if he's just really that old. He's really that old and really need to take his butt off this bench, because how did you give the towel? How did you give the young man that has the least background? He has the least background. He has 2 misdemeanors on his record.
Right.
How did you give him the most time?
I want to say this, Ms. Gail. Now, let me
say
this.
Yes, ma'am.
To any listeners out here, if you have a comment, the phone number is 516-531-9540, and just press 1, okay? But you made the statement that when Judge Schrader, okay, did you read this? Did you get this information just from word of mouth, or did you read somewhere some kind of valid publication that stated that when Judge Schrader has the black defendants, he allows the prosecution to say whatever they want? Is this something that was told to you by others, or did you read this somewhere?
I actually got this from a lot of North Chicago defendants' families, as well as Waukegan, Illinois' defendants' families, as well as Zion, Illinois' defendants' families. He's targeting black infested, I would say in that sense, a lack of better word, towns, neighborhoods, where he know they've been in his town or visit his town or lived in his town for a moment. He's slamming them. I had so many women reach out to me and say he did the same thing to my nephew. I'm so sorry. I feel so helpless. I wish I could tell you what to do. So many black women, so many black fathers.
Now, Ms. Gail, so basically, I would want to know if Judge Schrader is following the constitutional and state sentencing laws. Because that means a lot of these cases.
Who's
going to
hold him accountable? Ms. Beverly,
well,
who's holding him accountable? They're just letting him do. They letting him do everything he wants to do. So it's like,
well,
we're just all helpless and have to surrender and be submissive to him. He's doing whatever he wants to do to these black people's lives, and he knows there's nothing we can do about it.
Have you reached out to the newspaper in your area?
I've reached out to everyone. Everyone. I actually called the public defender's office. and I have someone that's going to work with me from there. And then I also have a gentleman that works with Judge Schroeder, and he just said, you know, enough is enough. Like, I've sat back. He said, I feel bad now. You know, like, so evidently he's been sitting by just watching everything, and now he can't take it. Either it's messing with his conscience, or rather he's just a good person, or maybe God has touched his heart. But I just don't know.
Let me say this, Ms. Gail, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
As I stated to you the first time we had our conversation, I gave you some suggestions, and my suggestion, you know, was to go to the public defender's office about a new trial for your son. And also I asked, you know, I told you about getting his IEPs from the school, you know, showing, you know, his disabilities and things like that. But I told you that I wanted to request the transcript of those hearings and I would hope that the court reporter is writing down everything he said when he called his son a thug and said all those other inappropriate things that were unnecessary as an official. So I want to know, I did call that Kenosha courthouse today, and I did.
That's when I knew it was over with.
Right, the address and everything for they transferred me to the court reporter, and then told me I had to request the transcript from her. So we need to get those transcripts so we can validate.
I'm willing to do anything you need me to do,
right,
Ms. Beverly. Anything you need me to do.
Because one of the biggest things we need to do is get Judge Bruce Schroeder, however you want to say it, we need to get him off the bench, okay? We need to get him off the bench, and we need to get some of these organizations, maybe possibly some Black Lives Matter organizations or some folks, organizations that have the funding or something, so that we can possibly get a petition out there to get rid of Judge Schroeder. Something needs to happen. I do have information on how to get a judge removed or recalled or dismissed or whatever like that, the different forms. So we're going to go ahead and go through that. But no, and I want to say this to you. As Black people, no, we're not hopeless. No, we're never hopeless. We're never hopeless. You keep trying until you succeed. And if you don't succeed, at least you try. So no, we're not hopeless.
I understand what you're saying. I promise you I do. But when you just been done bad so long, and when you come from a family that has not instilled the strongness and the values that you need to have and just make you feel like it's hope, you know, all you have is what's in your heart. And what I feel like in my heart right now, I just feel so helpless, especially listen to all these other Black families saying that this man has destroyed their life.
You cannot feel that way. You cannot feel helpless.
I know you're saying I can't, but I do.
Yes. But you got to find a way to pick it. You have to find a way.
And I'm going to bring religion in here. You have to pray about it.
My son cried to me on the phone, Ms. Beverly. Yes. He said, Ma, I did everything they told me to do. He said, Ma, they promised me, my lawyer promised me, you know, if I took the plea, like, I would get this. He said, Ma, why did this happen? And when you don't have the answers to what, you know, I'm like, okay, well, son, do it. Like, you know, he valued me. He valued me because I'm all he has, because his daddy abandoned him. So I'm all he has. So I told my son to take this. I should have. I should have waited.
Miguel, you are a law-abiding citizen, and you did what you thought was right. And I'm going to say this to you. You have to. I'm going to put religion in this, because I'm a Christian, and I'm going to say this to you. You have to pray to God for comfort. You understand? You have to pray to God for comfort. And you have to pray to God for strength, okay?
Yes,
you have
ma'am.
To pay. This is how parents become advocates. Right now, your advocacy is starting. You said there are so many Black parents out here in Waukegan, North Illinois, and all these different areas whose sons and daughters or whatever have been given unfair sentences as first-time offenders and all of this. Then what happens is you become the advocate. You become the advocate.
Yes, ma'am.
You start getting these folks together. You ask God for strength. Okay?
Yes,
and as parents, regardless of how bad our heart is hurting, okay, no matter how much we want to scream and cry and yell, we can't do it in front of our kids. Okay?
Yeah.
Because our strength gives them strength. So we have to be strong in order to help them to become strong. You understand me? So
yes,
I
ma'am.
You're a strong woman. You've already achieved something. You reached out to me. I'm just a citizen. But I do the best I can.
Well, you're just everything to me, Ms. Beverly. Let me just tell you that. You're just everything to me, and thank you so much.
I do the best I can because I was raised in a civil rights family, you know, with the NAACP, and I was a youth council advisor for 12 years. So it's just in my blood. It's in my mind, you know.
And I thank you. I really thank you. I thank you guys for allowing me. Yes.
Right. And I'm gonna put a call out again. If there are any attorneys out there, any attorney,
anybody who will help me, anybody who will just, I don't want any money from anyone. I just want someone to help me, direct me to what I need to do.
Let me put this call out here, Ms. Gail. If there are any attorneys out there, any organizations who can help Ms. Gail, if there are any attorneys who take pro bono cases and can help Ms. Gail, please do. Please do.
Give a number where they can contact you.
Right. I have a Facebook page. Go on Facebook. I have a Facebook page, Take a Stand Today and Always. You can message me with Beverly Williams on Facebook, okay? You can do that. I'm just going to use Facebook as my contact, all right?
Okay.
You can message me on Facebook if you feel that you can help Ms. Gail with her son, Cortez Bailey, being sentenced to a supermax prison, with only two misdemeanors on his record by Judge Schrader, the vice judge.
And sentenced to 10 years. Sentenced to 10 years, 5 years confinement, and five years at home.
Right. And let me say this also, too, Ms. Gail, because I think I'm going to be getting off in a minute. If there are other parents out there who have gone through bad sentencing, unfair sentencing with their children, and I'm going to say it again, and inbox me the same way. That's how Miss Gail contacted me. You can inbox me on Facebook, okay?
And let me add this. I'm QZ Team God's Girl on Facebook. If anyone wants to contact me as well, I don't know, Miss Beverly, if you suggest me give my number or no, or I don't know.
I don't know. I don't suggest you do that.
QZ Teen God's Girl on Facebook.
You have an email.
You guys can contact me.
You have an email.
QuinecaGales@yahoo.com, and that will be Q-U-I-N as in Nancy, E as in Edward, C as in Cat, A as in Apple, G as in George, A as in Apple, L as in Larry, E as in Edward, S as in Sam, @yahoo.com.
People gonna listen to this show all week and download this show all week, so you have the information out there and everything. So with a couple minutes left, I'd just like to thank y'all. I'd like to thank
in the mighty name of Jesus, thank y'all.
Let me give this
quick email address. You can also email, I have an email address for Take a Stand Today and Always, which is my Facebook group. I have eight of them, but this is the one that I do the civil rights. Take a stand today, that's the number two, day, @yahoo.com. You can also email me if you want to assist Ms. Gail.
Yes.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you guys. I pray that the judge as well. But God is going to prevail on this. God is going to prevail. I pray to God that he touches that judge's mind one day to realize that we're all human. We all should be treated the same. And
And you are in our prayers too.
I need y'all. I need y'all to continue to pray for me because this is really hard.
We only got a minute left. So, folks, I thank y'all for coming on Black Urban America Radio. Just one little advice I have, write them letters, give them something to read and everything. That'll lift up his spirits. Let his siblings write him letters and everything. That's how you keep the communication when somebody's in the belly.
Amen. And my last words is just treat people how you want to be treated and make sure you keep God first.
All right.
Absolutely, yes.
As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Watch out for your family members, folks.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Four Pops.